This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert, and I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert, and I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
So what do people get when they listen to The Late Show Pod Show? Let's sell this thing.
The extended moments, for sure, because we run out of time for broadcast, but we have plenty of time on the podcast.
It's kind of like being a live audience member of the show, because you get things that no one else hears. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
My guest today has had a very varied career. Receptionist, hairdresser, estate owner, head teacher, and actually died taking heroin. Of course, all of these are the many characters he has played over the years, I think, cementing himself as one of the UK's finest and most popular actors. Emmerdale fans out there, of course, will know him as the shrewd businessman, Declan Macy, who was described when he joined as knowing exactly what he wants and how to get it. He's prepared to be unpopular if it's good for business, and the people in the village recognise his confidence. He does have a softer side, but he's not the most attentive husband in the world. Jason Merrills, hello.
Hello.
Because often I read these to the stars that I speak to on soap, and the beginning descriptions don't resemble anything the character became. But actually, that was Declan, wasn't it?
Well, in a way, yeah, I guess so. Declan was all sorts of things, I think, over the few years I played him. I mean, I don't think anything else could have happened to him if we'd just been trying, really.
We're going to get to that.
But, yeah, I like the way they put in that he's not the most attentive of husbands. He never got a chance to be. They turned up and they were already having an affair.
I know. And actually, we're going to get to it. But I think him and Katie Sugden especially had a very nice relationship for a month or two, before things happened.
A couple of scenes.
The idea of obviously Soap from the Box, everyone knows at home, is that we talk about the soap first because it's Soap from the Box, and then we'll go a bit more into other stuff you've done. I would say you came in to play the part. I always remember being a director on Emmerdale. You were always worried about Home Farm. It was such a hard place to get right, and I think it always has been. I wasn't a fan of the show really before, but I mean, knowing how many families came and gone, did you kind of know that it's, I mean, Kim, for instance, Kim Tate's back there now. The Tate's probably the biggest legacy of Home Farm. It was just, for some reason, quite hard to get right. Did you feel that going in?
I wouldn't say that I did particularly. I mean, Amanda was there, running Home Farm. And I came in to sort of like spar against Amanda Donohoe eventually, like put money into it and eventually take it over by offer, I think, is what happened. So I kind of think she was already quite established there and was quite successful as that character.
Yeah, the Wilds had done well, actually. I mean,
And I didn't really think about it in those terms. I mean, I remember it used to be on at my nan's house after school. And I remember, you know, the Home Farm kind of, it would have been the Tates, would it?
I mean, they were Kim Tate,
And there was a chap in a wheelchair, wasn't there?
I think I've said this before, and it's all right to say, but I think there was some at the time, as we know, some producers have disagreements with actors, and I think he got put in a wheelchair because the producer at the time didn't like him.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Poor Peter. But yeah, I think I've seen it on Hollyoaks. I won't say who, that they got a facial disfigurement because they were unliked. So they knew they had to go in for 3 hours extra makeup every day.
Oh, dear.
I know.
Well, I got out of it lucky then.
You did, yeah. And so what we're going to start with is I do this. Now, I think you'll be quite good at this. And actually, because your stories, but it's kind of a quiz to take us through the storylines and to chat, because otherwise we'd be here basically for 10 hours. So first one is, Who did Declan flirt with at a hotel on his arrival, who then stole his car?
Well, that would be the awesome Charity Dingle.
Yes. And awesome is a word I would have instantly used. How amazing to go with Emma Atkins, because she is one of the best actresses I've worked with. She's incredible, isn't she?
She is. She is fantastic. And I had a ball working with her every time that we did. And I was always glad when the storyline involved her. We did a fantastic sort of bubble together with Duncan Foster.
Yes.
Which was... you know, going away to a cabin in the woods and me trying to kill her and bury her. but it was kind of like a little mini sort of film. And yeah, I loved doing that. I loved doing all that stuff with her.
There's some actresses, there's some actors who I love working with Emma. You know, there's lots of people at Emmerdale, it's not just Emma, but who you never quite knew, you know, because soap, I think, can be very, how it's written, and it's no disrespect to the writers either, but it can be quite on the nose. You know, and it takes a clever actor to bring something to it. And I think it takes a clever actor to stay in soap and create a character because of that, because you actually need to invest quite a lot of work into bringing those scripts to be, make your character realistic because of what we said, you go through so much.
Yeah. I remember being at an ITV, I don't think you'll mind me saying this. I remember being at an ITV party when I was at Emmerdale and talking to an actor I know called Joe Dattine, who's on
lovely Joe, yeah.
And we have a mutual friend, and we were talking about him, and he had a show on at that time, and we were both talking about it, and I was just saying I think he's really good in it. I think it's surprising because it's not quite his casting bracket, but I think it really worked. He was like, he said to me, yeah, but you know, it's easy to be good when you're picked up in the morning. You know, you've got loads of rehearsal. You get this, you get that. You've got your own little trailer. It's fucking hard to be good in this.
Yeah, it's true. But it's so fast.
Right, you know, it's kind of like soap's really fast. There's none of those bells and whistles. There's none of those luxuries. There's none of those.
And also you're working with different directors. And I would say there are some bad directors out there in soap. And some directors care more, but you know, some directors come in and they've suddenly got an idea where your character is supposed to be going in their block, but you've been doing back to back block. So it's not like you've got that bubble of a team. You know, it's great when you do a big block, but still it's a constant, you know, juggling, isn't it?
It is. And there's a thing that, you know, you don't, unless you are an actor, you don't really understand, or people don't really talk about it. It's hard to sort of talk about, but It's having an eye on your own work. Yes, you have a director. Yes, you writers write the material. But as it builds in whatever you're doing, whether it's a series or a film, you as the actor, no one teaches you this and no one warns you of this. You have to keep an eye on your work, and you have to keep an eye on its trajectory and the notes that you hit and how hard you hit them. And, you know, you have to keep an eye on that for yourself. And of course, in soap, that becomes harder because it's faster and there's more of it.
Yeah.
And also, as you say, it's quite on the nose sometimes. It's quite throwaway stuff sometimes. And to invest that with life and drama and colour is, at the same time, keep an eye on where you're going and what the logic is and what the level of volume of your performance is. All of those things are quite tricky.
Yeah. They are. And that's why we've definitely discovered over three seasons now that, as I knew anyway, to work in soap, you know, it's if you're new, it's the best training you can have. But if you're an established actor, it's still a big challenge because actually to get it right it is really hard. Did you actually, there was a guy from EastEnders that told me on season one that Neil, and I was like, oh, wow, I hadn't thought of that. He actually kind of did watch quite a lot of EastEnders before he went in, because he went, obviously, each show that you work on has got quite a different level of acting. Like you said, you know, some EastEnders is very different to Emmerdale. So it's like you kind of don't want to stick out amongst your colleagues. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. All of the actors that I looked at on Emmerdale, there's so many good ones on it. And I did look at it, and I did sort of like, I was often blown away by what I saw. I mean, you know, there is just great actors on it. I mean, there are things on it, there are things about, there are sort of cliches of soap it's nothing really, not so much to do with the actor as to do with the way that the soap kind of rhythm moves.
Yes.
Like that thing of like the camera sort of staying on a character for the doom, doom, doom.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you're not in EastEnders, you know what I mean? Every soap has
we
that.
We all
moment.
Do it. Yeah, we all do. We used it on Emmerdale and Corey, didn't we? Because that was the hardest thing.
Well, I wasn't having that. I wasn't having that shit. I wasn't not going to have that. And
but you
and
have to, the thing is, you have to bloody do it on EastEnders because when you're filming it, you actually have to do the difference in your head because you know that looks, you know, something's got to last that long.
I know, but I would get out of the scene. I would get out of the scene.
Yeah, yeah.
I would get out of the shot because I could tell that that's what they wanted, and I would invent something to do that I didn't have to do that because
you don't. It's not real life. I mean, it has to be. You have to find the truth somewhere. I mean, when would you stand? I remember watching a few episodes. You know, when someone would direct it, and you know, someone goes and talks, through the window to nothing, and you go, "When do you do that in real life?" Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And I know you have to have a bit of that, but I mean, the thing we're talking about Emma and Amanda Donahoe, of course, who played Natasha, who I was kind of like quite starstruck by at first, only because it wasn't rare. It was quite rare that you had someone who was in Liar Liar come into the show. Yeah. And I know she found it tough because, again, she got quite a lot of flack, actually, because, you know, oh, who does she think she is? Which she wasn't at all. But I think she asked for dinner in the dressing room the first day. She didn't again because they went, "You don't have it." And Emmerdale was very good at but it wasn't her. I was always like, "That's not her fault," because that's what she's used to. Do you know what I mean? It's like she was more than mucky. But what I love about soap, and I'm sure you agree, and you got to work with a lot of them, is it's always been great for women because a lot of TV is not, and you get some really strong women characters in soap.
Absolutely, you do. Yeah, yeah.
Right,
she was amazing. Yeah,
she was amazing. What a way to come in with Emma and Amanda.
That's actually a Rag and Bone Man coming down my road.
Is it really? That's amazing. A Rag and Bone. Jason lives in the set of Lark Rise of Candleford still.
I do, yeah. I live in the 19th century here. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, next question. Who did Declan employ at Home Farm as a state manager?
As a state manager?
Yeah. Another female.
Would that have been my sister?
No, earlier than that. She's a comedy neighbour of mine.
Oh, of course. Nicola Wheeler, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Nicola. And again, I bring Nicola into it because, again, obviously she's an amazing actress. But again, I think, and I'm sure you will agree, but tell me, I mean, for a character like Declan, he's there, you know, he's written in, obviously, at the beginning as this archetypal, you know, like we just said, that description, you know what they want.
Yeah.
It must be always quite nice, and that's a luxury of soap, to suddenly be put with a different dynamic. You know, a comedy character, really good, that throws Declan off the road.
Yes, indeed. She was very funny. We had a lot of laughs in that office. A lot of laughs.
And that's tough for you as well. So the question is really, like, because of that character, how do you then find, because again, in real life, you probably wouldn't have someone like Declan be in those situations that suddenly... Yeah, I mean, I know it's heightened, but how do you navigate your way through that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was tough. I mean, Stuart Blackburn, who when I started there was a story editor, and I think he was a story editor, and then he became the producer, but he said to me once, "We come to dread that knock on the story door, which is Jason Merrill's coming to talk about a script and the logic in the script and how he'd like to change this and change that." So I was a bit of a one for that.
You were the June Brown of Emmerdale.
And I was, you know, kind of like, yeah. Can
but I again, just, I've always said I love that of actors, because I actually hate actors that don't do that. But I'd hate actors who would arrive in the pub and go, "Well, you know, they slept with my brother. Why would I be stood here?" And you're like, "Well, why haven't you thought of this before?" I mean, and, you know, I think
absolutely.
You have to be in control of it, of your own character, like you said.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you know, people haven't got time to do it on the floor in the wall pack with six scenes, you know, in one scene. So you need to make those inroads earlier than that. Yeah. But I did that. So, I wouldn't say that it was always completely successful in terms of logic. How do you navigate that and justify where?
How
he
have
is
I slept with her? Then slept with her mother, and then killed her sister. Yeah.
But we tried to find we tried our best to find a way through, and fair play to them. They were quite open to it with me, although I think they got pissed off with the amount that I wanted to talk about. But I think they were, you know, it was a dialogue, and I'm grateful for that. I mean,
I think underneath, and I think that dialogue, you know, making a stand, that dialogue needs to continue because it can't be ruled by the story producer and stuff, because it has to be that, as I always bring it back to June Brown, because... Yeah. She knew what tea set, you know, she'd go mad if the wrong tea set was out, if so-and-so came. But that is what developed Dot Cotton as one of the biggest iconic characters of all time, because she had the dress for that. She had that for that. There was a rhythm. There was a character there, and she would force that home, which I loved.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I respect all that to that. But right. We also got then soon after Nicola, the family arrived. Now that was a bit of a, and I'm not disregarding the actors again, for me personally, it didn't quite work. It was a weird mixture of people. That never really took off for me. What is it hard for you? Because you were then established. Is it hard? Were you involved in the casting of that, the family coming in? Or was it, is it again, no, a bit like, no. Oh.
I think we sat in on a few meetings for Jamie's character. What was he called? It's gone out of my head.
That was Robbie. At first we had Robbie. Mia arrived and it was the wife, God, I've forgot her name, and the granddad, the dad.
It was, that was difficult because I think, you know, Frank, he lived in Ireland and he kind of got there and didn't really want to be there because he wanted to go home.
Yeah,
it's a long way from home. And it was quite difficult, you know, for a guy of his age that done what he'd done. And he quite quickly didn't like it much.
No.
So it kind of didn't, you know, that was always going to go away. That didn't really land.
It's hard. It's hard. It's hard to say because it's, you know, talking about relationships, you'd have love relationships and so it's, which again can be disastrous, but if the chemistry is right, it's amazing. But if you bring in, you know, it amuses me that they don't do it all the time. When they brought in the Bartons, they actually, you know, I think Natalie, J. Rob, all credit to them and stuff, and James, they went off and they had weekends together and stuff. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like it's very hard to get a new family on a set and suddenly you're supposed to be, you know, this the steeped in history, isn't it?
It is really hard. And I didn't know about that. You know, this was one of the things. And suddenly I had a wife and suddenly she was turning up.
Yeah.
That was quite, you have to turn on a sixpence and sort of go, oh, right. Okay. So now I've got to be that person that did that and is now allowing that to happen. And immediately she arrives, she's already having an affair with, with Adam. So I mean, yeah, it's kind of it was all before I'd even kind of learned her name. I didn't really have any say in that. No.
I'm just thinking, what's it like for you? Because I think there was some, you know, there's been inexperienced actors coming to Wimbledon. I think this is why at the moment, so for everyone to know how the audition process works, obviously normally you come in and you then go to a screen test. At the moment, self-tapes have taken over the world from lockdown, which I think has got so many bad things to it, in the fact that you don't get people in a room, you don't see how nervous they are, you don't see in screen tests
you're having to do it.
Yeah. And you think, especially for something like Emmerdale, you see new people with, obviously, I mean, I'm sure even as a well-established actor to you, still walking onto a set of a program that's run for 6 years and suddenly your first day on set must always be quite terrifying.
Yeah. Luckily, my first day on Emmerdale, we were on location, so at a hotel for the charity thing. So it was like, it wasn't dissimilar to
being what you've done.
Any other TV drama, because, you know, as I said to you on the radio show, when you're at the village or when you're on location, things slow down to single camera pace, you know, which is more or less pretty standard across the board.
Yeah.
So it was more or less what I was used to. But I mean, I've got to mention the wonderful and tragically not with us anymore, Gavin Blythe.
Amazing. So Gavin, to everyone, was our series producer for many years and was incredible. What an incredible man.
Yeah, a really lovely man.
Yeah.
I'm round about answering your question. I didn't have all of that because I was invited very kindly by him to join the show, and it happened at a time when, you know, that I needed to do it. And but I didn't know what to do. And he rang me up, and I needed to do something, rather. I didn't know what to do. And he rang me up through my agent, and he just said, look, you know, I've been a fan of yours since Cutting It. And he said something very clever, which I thought, he said, I used to watch Cutting It and think, this is like a soap on film.
It was
a soap on film with kind of film, perhaps kind of photographic, more photographic standards, and pace and et cetera, and sweep perhaps. But it was pretty soapy.
As most TV dramas are now, to be honest.
Yeah. And he talked really intelligently about that. And he talked about this character that he wanted to bring in and how, you know, he wanted to collaborate with me on it and blah, blah, blah. So it was such a lovely way to join a soap. I didn't have all of those worries because I was being invited to sort of help create this guy, you know?
Which is really nice, because I've seen some great people like Vicky McClure from Line of Duty came for a screen test for Emmerdale, and not at all was she not good. But again, people are different for different, people are not quite right for that role or whatever. And I'm sure she's very pleased in the end she didn't get that. But that's kind of a thing at the moment in acting, is what is lacking that thing now. It's turned into, they see 250 tapes instead of 20 people in a room. Do you know what I mean? And I hope it changes again, that.
I just think they're just getting away with not having to do all the legwork.
Which is what makes it...
You have to set up all the lights, all the cameras. You've got to again get it off your camera onto your computer. You've got to put it onto WeTransfer, make sure it's got to your agent. I mean, it all takes hours. And it's like all of that work is supposed to be done by the casting director. So that you just turn up and go, hello, do you want me or do you not want me?
And also you lack that feeling of, it's not just acting ability, it's also what they're like as a person. Are they going to fit into the company? Are they full of nerves? And you go, well, they're never going to be able to cope with the first week on Emmerdale. Do you know what I mean? If they're this, everyone's nervous. But that for me is truly lacking, because that someone can bring it to life in a room, you know. And also I'm sure you get this at self-tapes at home, you don't get that same adrenaline and the buzz, because obviously you can repeat it as many times as you want.
Yeah, I mean, I work with an actor called Jared Kidd, and he turned my head around it, around about self-tapes, because I was really down on it. And I was doing pilot season every year, so in pilot season I was churning these things out, sending them across the Atlantic, and hearing nothing again and again and again and again and again. And it's so much work, as I said before, there's so much work involved, setting it all up, different costumes, learning 8 pages of American dialogue, all of this, and then sending them off. And he just said to me, we were doing this job in Morocco, this kind of Life of Jesus job, and we had a lot of hanging around. And he was saying, you know, what you need to
speak.
What you need to do is turn your head around about it and imagine it like you're making your own little movies here, and you're selling yourself and
Get
into it, get a corner of your house and put the stuff up and blah, blah, blah. And I do try and do that. And I do work hard at them.
Do you have someone good to read it with you as well? Because a lot of the stuff I saw, you'll be concentrating on the person, the dad in the background who can't read.
I'm lucky with that, with Emma, my wife. She's an actor, so brilliant.
Oh, that's amazing. Great.
But they're the only arguments we have, by the way, you know, at the moment, these days.
I'm sure, there are loads of people who said that. I actually did my story, which I don't think I've told on this before, is Jenna Coleman, who's obviously now huge. I did quite a few self-tapes at home. This was the most bizarre one, and she won't mind me saying this at all. It was for a Disney film, and basically she had been told by this point she's left Emmerdale but not done much else. If they cast a really famous male, they could go for someone like her. But if it was a really famous female, then, you know, it wouldn't be. But anyway, it was for a Disney film, but they gave her the bed scene from Good Will Hunting to read, which was full of swearing and stuff. And it was like, what? But I had to read it with her, and I was like going, oh God, I'm going to have to try to do an American accent with you, because it's not like for you, it's not flowing. So that's me.
Yeah.
Oh God, I've still got it. So it's quite horrendous. But they're bizarre. I'd never got my head around why for this new Aladdin film or whatever it was, they were giving her the effing blinding Good Will Hunting love scene. Bizarre.
That's really weird, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah. Maybe it was just, anyway. Right, so we mentioned, well, this is easy. We mentioned her. Who did Declan start to date but was warned off by his daughter, Ella? And you had loads, but we talked about it earlier. The one with the good, you had good chemistry, you two.
Oh, Sammy.
Yes, lovely Sammy Wimmerly played Katie Sugden, yeah. which I remember actually them putting you two. I mean, all respect to Sammy as well. I've always said this. Sammy's character was almost the most normal character, I think, in Emmerdale, which I always felt was the hardest to play because she was basically just a normal girl. And actually, she wasn't a bitch. She wasn't a, you know, thingy. Yeah. And actually, she did normal so well, which is not putting her down. It's bigging her up big style.
She's great, Sammy. She's really good. Yeah. And she's one of those kids that grew up in it and learned their craft really well. I mean, she's amazing. I would love to work with Sammy, yeah.
And what's it like for you when, I'm sure, and you don't need to name names, have you had relationships in shows where the chemistry's just not been there and it's a tough thing every day? Do you know what I mean? Have you had that?
I have.
Have you, yeah. And you don't know, I'm not looking for names, but it must be quite tough, that.
Yeah, it is tough. Yeah, it's kind of, Yeah. I mean, acting is it's about connecting and reacting and listening and helping each other make something work. And yeah, if there's a resistance to that, it's quite difficult. Yeah.
It's quite
I haven't had it a lot, but I've experienced it, certainly.
I've experienced it as a director, and I won't tell which show where, there's one situation where both people were saying, can you ask if they're going to say that? And I was like, I can't believe this is actually happening in a line run. Like, wow. And it's really, it's a horrible atmosphere on set when it's like that. I've been very lucky and I haven't been in that situation very much. Because again, it should be such a great job we do, isn't it? You want to be, everyone should be having the best time ever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as Mark Rylance said to my wife, when she did a play at the Globe many, many years ago. I think she was not long out of drama school. And she was quite, she had a bit of stage fright, which she gets now and again. It's not doesn't stop her working, but she gets a bit of stage fright.
Yeah, and not uncommon as well.
She was about to go on and I mean, I wasn't involved. She's just told me this story and she just said, Mark Rylance said to her, but what are you worried, in that twinkly way you can just imagine it, but what are you worried about? I mean, we're going out to play. We're going to just go out and play.
Oh, that's
it was
great.
Kind of like he just turned it around for her and said, you know, it's about, and that's what it is, that's why we're lucky, because it is about play. And I think in the best casts you'll see, you know,
I always thought you could see when, you know, I could tell almost which director had done a block because of knowing the interaction. I think part of being a director is not just the technical side, it's having fun but knowing what you're doing. But you want to create, it's your job. I always got told that from the very beginning, to create the atmosphere on set. Which is so important, and it's such a fun job. You're like, you've got to have a laugh, you know. I always remember it's people like Patsy Palmer that used to amaze me, because Bianca used to cry all the time, and you know, she could literally go from crying of laughter to what you go action is being tear, and I'm like, how? That's a skill.
yeah. And sometimes I think you can wander onto a set and see everyone messing about and thinking, wow, is everyone just messing about all the time?
Yeah. And
in a way they are, but often that's the glue that kind of becomes the glue that then the scene sort of sticks to, that kind of chemistry that you built up by messing around, making each other laugh.
Yeah.
And connecting.
And we all know, like when I did the Cot Death, there'll be days where none of that happens, and everyone, you know, it's not everyone's professional knows, and everyone knows how to, you know. And then there's amazing days like that where you could hear a pin drop. Do you know what I mean? Where you go, what a different day to yesterday when we're all. But so that's kind of the. We'll get to the end of Emmerdale. I mean, again, like we said, I read this. I mean, so much happened to you. You got charged for murder because the bones were found at the music festival, and you paid someone to carry the music festival on. The amount of deaths. What I love, actually,
I stood on stage with the Proclaimers and Sammy.
Were the Proclaimers there?
Yes,
that's amazing. And also, we must mention, because your wedding to Sammy was the live episode. Was it? Was it your wedding to her?
Was it? Yeah, I guess it was.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah. So to be, I mean, I've talked about the live episode quite a lot, so we won't talk about it that much. But I mean, again, for you,
that was a buzz. Yeah.
What an amazing, because I mean, I think poor Joe Joyner will never, and especially because I mentioned it so many times on this show, you know, unfortunately, she called Adam Woodger Adam instead of Ian, which goes down in history. And unfortunately, because again, it's not like, I mean, it's not like theatre, is it? It's like there's so much more that could go wrong that's out of your control.
Yeah.
But you know also most that the there's millions of people watching.
Yeah, most of the rehearsal with the camera moves and the, you know, and the different cueing points. That was the hardest thing about it, really, for everyone, including the actors. But it was a buzz to do. I really enjoyed it. We all did. Everyone was really buzzing.
It was. It was incredible. What an incredible atmosphere. And like again, all credit to the soap teams, because to pull off a live, I mean, Emmerdale, obviously, you've got the village, 45 minutes away from the interiors. EastEnders, yeah, they were just, I remember the EastEnders one, Lacey Turner lost her voice just before, actually on the day, and the Spanish runner stood in for her, and I remember he went to kiss Charlie, who played Bradley, and he was like, we don't need to go that far to the Spanish runner. But yeah, that was, I mean, she was in bits, and it was like, she was the murderer out of the guy anyway, but it was like, oh my God, but the buzz of that, what an amazing experience to be able to do a show like a theatre show live to millions, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, absolutely.
And so obviously that you went through so much, you obviously decided to leave. I mean, again, did you just think the road had, you know, had come to it? You couldn't do much more with Declan, or was it a personal choice? Do you know what I mean?
There's all sorts of reasons. I mean, so many, but I mean, I never intended to stay, and I was always clear about that when I joined. And is that okay? I was always saying, are you okay with this? I don't want... Yeah. And I've got nothing against...
I don't want to die here.
But I completely understand the decision that other actors might make when they stay. Yeah. But they would say themselves, I'm sure, and I've heard them say, that they made that decision and they realise it probably means they probably won't do much other stuff, you know. But that's the decision that they've made, and I totally get it, and that's fine. But it wasn't something that I ever wanted to do, was to stay. Because I mean, I guess at root, that's my only beef with soap in general, and not in particular Emmerdale, all of it, is that I like a story. A story has a beginning and a middle and an end. And what you're asked to do on a soap is endless.
Yes,
and formless.
Yeah.
And I found that a little bit frustrating after a few years, because it was like, I don't, what's this for? Where's it going? What are we saying? And what am I doing? And who am I? Who is he? Kind of lost thread of what it was all about, really. But in another situation, you're asked as an actor to come and tell a story.
Yeah.
And you're given... you're given the ABC of it, and they look at you and they say, we want you to play this ABC because we think that you can tell this story. And I'm just more comfortable with that. I'm more ambitious to do more stories
and that, stories. And I do kind of think soap has lost its way there slightly, because I think that's why because of the way, like, the Pamson Clemony played Pat, and the, you know, they, it was very much that they suddenly wouldn't throw in the sister that they never knew and stuff. Do you know what I mean? And yeah, I do think that's where soap changed for the worse, because I still don't think those iconic characters from every soap, I mean, you've still got Kane, you've still got Charity and stuff. There's not many new, and this is no disrespect to the actors and the shows, but it is a bit of a disrespect to how the shows work now, that they're never going to get these characters again unless you do. You can't just keep throwing them, you know, you can't suddenly make someone a serial killer, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but, you know, there's a thing, and it's nothing to do with anyone that I work with or even the producers, because it's above that.
Yeah.
It's above them. But there's a kind of greed about doing 6 episodes a week.
Yes. No.
I didn't like. And it's kind of, I felt.
You're totally right. It goes way above. Yeah.
If we did 3, how much better would they be?
Yeah.
The money and the time and the expertise invested in those 6 spread across 6, if we put them into 3, which it, I think it used to be. Didn't it
used to be 2 and yeah, like, 2. And also I think I'm sure you'll agree, TV has changed so much now that I believe, you know, that soap shouldn't do stunts anymore, because they just will never look like what we're used to seeing now or daily. Mm. On big shows. Yeah, and actually the thing that soap has is characters that they can sit around a table and talk about, if they're good characters, which they used to be, and there's still a lot that are, but they should be able to sit around the table and talk about nothing with a good script, and it would be the most entertaining thing in the world.
Absolutely. And I think you find that when you look at those kind of those big numbers that they do to advertise a big story, and they'll shoot them on 35 mil.
Yes.
And you'll suddenly see this advert come on for something either in EastEnders or Corrie or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's shot on film and it looks really sexy and it looks like a film trailer.
And then the stunt comes on.
What's actually advertising is then really HD, you know, normal soap view.
Stuff. And again,
and it kind of undercuts it. Undercuts it a little bit.
It does. It's a hard situation. We talk about it lots now on the podcast because where's soap going? Do you know what I mean? Because where people that don't tune in at 7:30, people don't pick up their Radio Times and Circle anymore. You know, it's a very different generation. I don't think I've watched. I love that Line of Duty last year still only didn't binge and it was one episode a week. I love that idea that the nation are watching television together.
We don't
have that anymore. Let's move off Emmerdale, as lovely as Emmerdale is. We'll go through a few of your, you've done so much. We've talked on the radio about Casualty, which we know was your first big TV break. I mean, we must mention Queer as Folk again. We talked about the radio, we'll mention it here if people haven't, because it was, one of the most, and It's a Sin recently has done the same kind of thing, but not quite as much as Queer as Folk, because it was so groundbreaking. It was unbelievable, you know, and it was seeing someone being... Yeah, it was a lot of sexual practice that no one had even probably knew existed. And it was a very truthful, honest look at, I suppose, gay life, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
It must be so exciting for you to get that. You know, like you were saying, wanting a story, it must be so exciting when something jumps off the page. You're like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, you could just see it was so well written. I'd not seen a script like that, a TV script like that. And the team were really sort of young and exciting. And I already knew Craig, who was a good mate of mine. We were actually lived in a bachelor pad. Before we did that show. Maybe we were still living there. I can't remember, in Muswell Hill. So he was a really good mate of mine, and it was a blast. It was a wonderful, wonderful thing. I mean, there were so many funny moments on it. I remember we were in a club on Canal Street. I think it's Cruise 101, or used to be. I don't know if it's still called that. We're filming this scene in a gay club, but for some reason, the extras that they'd booked that day to fill it up weren't necessarily gay club frequenters. They weren't necessarily gay, and they weren't necessarily people that had been to a gay club. They weren't necessarily people that danced like they were in a gay club. So they would. There was a lot of dancing, like blokes dance, you know,
dance at weddings. And for everyone out there, dancing so hard because you never have the music to dance to when you're filming telly either.
Yeah. And so one of my favourite memories is the makeup guy who was gay going around and giving all of these extras gay dancing lessons, which basically involved, doesn't matter what you're doing up there, but just shake your tush a little bit more and you'll be fine. And
That's a secret for everyone listening, because we try to get behind the scenes, that actually, so how we film, obviously, is that you can't have music on because over dialogue, you're going to cut, so you can't have music jumping, so they'll give you a burst of music. So when you're watching telly and they're in a club, A, no one's ever speaking loud enough, and it feels weird because you're shouting, but B, watch everyone in the background because they have a burst, but then they lose track of it and everyone's basically dancing to a different song in the background.
Yeah.
I'm sure really now there's mental. A way of doing it. They could do it like silent disco type, actually. Everyone could just put headphones in, because I do hate club scenes that look ridiculously bad. Poor extras or supporting actors that they have to do that. And I mean, it must have been amazing. It didn't come back, obviously, because it was a one-off series. But I mean, you knew it was a great script. Because I'm saying that now. It was a culture.
No, they did come back.
Go on. Sorry, I was going to... Oh, did it come? But the reaction at the time was quite bad, wasn't it? I remember, because I think the sponsors pulled out at first, didn't they?
Do you know what? I don't remember that. I mean, I think there was controversy, certainly, because it was full on.
I think it was Carlsberg, or possibly, but I'm sure when I spoke to someone else who was in it. I don't know if it was Denise Black, because she was in it, wasn't she? And I think she said it was one of those, basically, it was her that she said on this podcast, that she said, we all knew it was brilliant, but it was a slow burner, actually. Like, it had its cult audience, but over the years, it kind of got more and more popular.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I didn't know. I'm not sure. My memory of it was that it was a pretty sort of culty but strong hit right from the start. But maybe, you know, I'm just sugarcoating it. I do remember, you know, I mean, Charlie, after we'd finished it, I remember that, so by that point, it was obviously huge.
Yeah.
Charlie went over to New York. I think maybe it was the beginning of his, you know, American journey. I think it might have been even, you know, going over for his first American job. I don't know. I can't remember now. But he said he was in a club in New York and and Madonna was a massive fan of
Wow.
Girls Pop, because it was all being passed around on VHS tape.
Right.
And it was like part of the subculture.
Wow.
And Madonna was at a club with him and he was talking to her about this. And then a journalist, and he was so green, poor Charlie, journalist interviewed and said, "Have you just been talking to Madonna? So do you like her? Do you like her? Do you like Madonna?" And he was going, "Are you mad? She's old enough to be my mother." and that was the front page of like whatever their tabloid is in New York. I can't remember the name of it. Whatever their like kind of equivalent of the Sun is.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the front page. And he was, I don't know, he was a bit mortified, I think.
I'm sure. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Those shows, you go, well, as an actor, you don't, it, you know, because you took, I suppose it was moving to cutting it, because that's where probably you catapulted to really recognisable fame in the UK, wasn't it? Because that was such a huge hit. It was kind of like, I know, yeah. you were working and stuff and you were known to people, but that kind of was one of those shows that I, to be honest, I'll hands down, I never watched it, but I still know everything about it because it was one of those shows that like just everyone knew.
Yeah, it was. And again, you know, I've been really lucky with these kind of maverick, strong writers, British writers, that, I mean, we sort of called it golden age of TV back then, you know, late 90s, noughties. And there was a lot being made, and most of it was being made in Manchester or the North.
Yeah, true.
Not so London centric as it has come to be again since. And it was a fantastic, fantastically creative time. And Debbie Horsfield, again, another really strong writer, knew her vision, knew what she was doing from top to bottom, knew every aspect of her character, gave me the job. She told me afterwards, after I had the job, she told me that what swung it for her and for them was that I didn't like, I play Gavin, who's a hairdresser, and the love of my life sort of strays during the series, and her old flame.
A particular occurrence in your career, Jason, I have to say.
Ben Daniels. And I think he'd know. He's like, they're supposed to be in love, and he's meant to be bright, and they're meant to be, you know, they're meant to be canny pair. They're not, it's not like they're dried up and there's nothing left between them. They're meant to be, this is meant to be something. I said, I think he'd know. And she said, he does know. And she changed her mind and rewrote.
Oh, wow. Okay, brilliant.
He does, and she liked that. I mean, I don't know whether, actually, maybe I'm over-egging it. I don't know if she actually hadn't had that idea. But she hadn't heard that from anyone else, and thought that was the strongest aspect to Gavin.
Which goes back to our earlier thing, which is so important for actors to be so vocal like that, because it is. It's so and for me, not watching it, right, because again, I've said before, Happy Valley, when I saw the advert, very deceiving, the advert in a clever way, and I thought, oh, it's another Heartbeat kind of thing. And then obviously first episode, you're like, shell shocked with mouth open again, it's the best thing I've ever seen. But not knowing cutting it, what was the success? Because for me, right, it was about a group of hairdressers. What was it, again, just brilliant scripts? Was it, what, why do you think it catapulted to like what it did?
I think it was, I mean, I think Gavin was right. And in the sense that, you know, it had that hooky, soapy, everyone's jumping in and out of bed with each other. But it was also, really beautifully shot and put together and designed. And again, the music, I mean, that guitar riff for Queer as Foe and the music for Cutting It, they played a part in why everyone watched it.
Yeah, you know, very
because
true.
It was a kind of like,
It was a little rock and roll part of the evening. It was when something comes on like that. You think, oh yeah, you know, this is cool. Had that little. It had something about it like that, and yeah, it looked great. I mean, the directors that worked on it, a few of them are doing movies, and you could see that then.
It's one of those ones that now would be. It's kind of again was quite forefront of its time, wasn't it? Because we have to remember there weren't these Netflix dramas and stuff at the time. So actually at the time there was the heartbeats and there was Where the Heart Is. You know, it was all very quite samey. Do you know what I mean?
And we were part of the regeneration. Again, I mean, a Queer as Folk was a kind of catalyst for Canal Street. You know, kind of took it to another level. And I think Cutting It was a part of the regeneration of the Northern Quarter. The Northern Quarter...
I thought you were going to say of hairdressers then.
Yeah, that's
what you were going to go. I was thinking, is that why Rachel had her hair cut in Friends because of Cutting It? It redefined hairdressers, but no, it wasn't that.
Yeah, but the Northern Quarter in Manchester was just a lot of it was derelict, but these big old kind of buildings that look quite New York-y. So it was brilliantly cinematic, all of the streets around the Salon. And they actually use it for New York quite a lot. I think they filmed quite a bit of Alfie there, the remake of Alfie.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, yeah. They did. It's the things. I was shocked that New York. Yeah, that was, whoever told me that, Nathan Sussex. Because I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe that wasn't New York. Yeah, they used that Northern Quarter a lot for that. Yeah.
Yeah, but we were there right at the beginning of that, and that was exciting. And you could tell. I mean, you could tell that, the facade of that first Salon for that first series. I don't know what it is now. It's some kind of restaurant, I think, now. But it's a beautiful old kind of Art Deco-y sort of stucco bits outside and massive windows. And then you walk out onto this street and it looks like you're walking out into Greenwich Village or something. So it was very cinematic. It looked good. I think that was a lot to do with its success as well as being so well written, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll go then to regular. You've also done Death in Paradise, which you said best show ever, Waterloo Road. At the moment, we've got Agatha Raisin coming back, which again has been Ashley, I'm a huge fan of, one of the extras, obviously, just incredible. And then she's kind of done this amazing character, Agatha Raisin. I know she's really involved in the show, isn't she? And I think we've said before, for me, I love it. I love it. It's a bizarre show. Like, I love it because I'm still quite freaked out by it. And I'm not sure why I love it, but I love it because if you put it on paper, I wouldn't watch. Like, again, I'll go, I'm not sure about that, but it's something about it. It's just, I think because of, we've got the Midsummer Nightmare, we've got the Midsummer Murders and the Death in Paradise, and this is, and you know, the Touch of Frost, we're all used to that. This throws everything kind of up in the air, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And it's a comedy, I guess. We think of it as a comedy, I think, most of us that work on it, because we're all mostly taking the piss and laughing a lot anyway, that helps. And it is kind of silly. What are we all doing? And why are we all doing it? You know, it's a bit silly. But once you suspend that and you're in the Cotswolds and you're enjoying yourself, then you get carried along with it. And I think the best episodes of it are the ones that allow that to happen effortlessly as possible, you know, and allow you to laugh along the way.
Yeah, because we said, like, you know, Midsummer Murders, Death in Paradise. I mean, you would know, you know, it's a tiny island, Death in Paradise. There was a murder every week. I mean, it's ridiculous. Yeah. And so it takes that on board, really. Do you know what I mean? Which is great because I know we love Death in Paradise and stuff, and you have to obviously suspend belief in that because otherwise they wouldn't be made. But still, it's kind of taking the mickey out of what is this genre that's amazing.
Yeah. I do remember I did Midsummer Murders just before, in between doing a couple of series of Agatha Raisin. And I love Neil Dudgeon. I think he's great. And I was talking to him about it and I was saying, I was winding him up, really. It's quite a lot of murders for a village, isn't there? In here. It's quite a lot of death going on. He said, it's not a village. It's a county.
Really defensive now.
You could tell he just had to say it about 28 times a week,
day. You know, like. Yeah. I have to mention recently on Emmerdale for the Soap fans as well, what I loved, because they've had Mina the serial killer, and I love Emmerdale for this because, yeah, I mean, she's obviously killed a lot of people. One of them ran out into the village but ran to the bridge, not into Main Street. One of them was in the hills, didn't take the hills off. One of them ran into a maze, and they actually referenced it. When she got caught, she said, oh my God, I've been thinking how stupid my victims are. You know, why did she run to the bridge? And, you know, there was Thingy who ran in heels. She died for fashion. And then I was like, I love that they did that. Because actually, you know, just to pick up on it, because you, as a viewer, you are shouting sometimes. So Agatha Raisin's back. Brilliant. And I mean, working with, I'm only picking Ashley out because she's, I mean, there must be some people, you just know that she does so much work for that. Do you know what I mean? Watching it.
Yeah, yeah, she does. And she, I think, you know, I said to you on the radio show, and I think we all feel the same at the work on it, that it's a very, because she wasn't, she's not the Agatha that's in the book.
No.
By quite a way. Although MC Beaton was really happy when Ashley wanted to do it. And was very, very happy with what Ashley ended up doing with it.
I mean, yeah, yeah.
But the actual written Agatha is quite a different kind of character, physically and in other ways too. But, you know, Ashley used what she could bring to it, and she brings a fantastic comic energy as well as quite a lot of glamour.
Yes.
And, and it's that, you know, that they don't often go so well together in a lot of actors, and that's quite a unique thing, I think.
It is.
But yeah, so she's very funny. She's just got funny bones. And
I do
really
feel helped. That people, everyone that's worked with Ricky Gervais somehow has had something's rubbed off on them. Do you know what I mean? Especially all the females. Yeah. There's something working with something like Ricky Gervais. I think that style of program he did and the style of characters he creates, you know, you can almost see the legacy of him, I think, through people that have worked with him, which is all credit to him as well. And then obviously the news. Now, you might be listening to this in December 2029, if we're all still here. So this won't be new news. But for people that are listening, as this series is coming out, which loads of you are, Happy Valley's back this year. Very exciting. One of the best dramas on TV. Sarah Lancashire's back. James Norton's back. The show's back. And you're in it, which is amazing.
Yes, I am, and I'm very, very happy about that.
Yes, I'm sure. I mean, yeah, it's one of those, it's, again, you know, when you go, you know, I'm a massive fan of French Saunders, and actually they were lovely, but when I worked with them, I was like, oh, I wish I hadn't met them, because it kind of ruined the illusion. So I'm kind of like, there's some shows you go, I would never want to work on Happy Valley, because I want it to suspend in belief. Like we said, when you're laughing between takes, I never want to think that's happening on a show like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
But I mean, it must, it's going to be, you haven't started filming yet. When do you start filming soon?
I start next week, actually. Yeah.
Oh, do you? Brilliant. And I mean, is it all I would say about that, because we can't give anything away, is do you feel that pressure when you're going into something? I mean, you've been in show, I know you've done shows, and cutting it, for instance, maybe you didn't know was going to be that big, but Happy Valley, we know, with Line of Duty and kind of like Killing Eve, it's that level of people expect this to be brilliant. Do you know what I mean? Is that kind of on your shoulders a little bit?
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's, a little bit. But I think every job in a way is kind of like climbing into this big new rubber suit.
Yeah.
And you've got to kind of like make it fit to you and then go on camera as if you're not wearing a big rubber suit.
Yes. Yeah.
Make it look really like you're really at ease and you know exactly what you're wearing and it's fine. Where it feels like you're in a banana suit. So that's kind of the feeling approaching any new job, I find.
And you know Sarah, don't you? You know Sarah Lancashire.
Yeah, yeah. So
and
they were all,
and you know
and Siobhan. Sarah, I mean, both of them are fantastic.
Incredible. Yeah, incredible.
And do such brilliant work. But Sarah was already, in a sense, up there when we did Clocking Off, because
of course,
she'd left Corrie, I think, with a really strong deal of doing lots of different dramas.
I think she was one of the last people to do that golden. I think she was the last person to have the golden handcuff deal. Yeah,
yeah, but that was the beginning of it, and Clocking Off was part of that, and so you know she had a wonderful part in that, and so did Shiv, but it was more support. And what's been lovely is to see, you know, an actress like Shiv really shine and come into her own and sort of lead stuff. Because
I'm so with you there. She's always been the second, you know, and seeing her in that recent thing. Yeah, she's very, very just, I love watching people. That she's very clever how she plays everything. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing them. I don't think I actually work with them on this episode. They're coming up, but I hope to in subsequent ones. But
And I'm just wondering, you obviously can't say, I'm just wondering, because of your, you know, the history of the characters you play, whether whoever you're with is going to have an affair in the first episode. And that's why I'm going to be glued to listen to watch.
I'm looking forward to the relief of not worrying about that, you know.
Yeah. Well, listen, Jason, it's been amazing to have you on the podcast. I mean, I love working with you. It's lovely to be in touch, and it's nice reliving stuff, actually. It's always nice and to talk TV. So thank you, and good luck, and hopefully we'll work together one day soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, look forward to it.
Take care, mate. Me and Jason recorded that chat quite a while ago, so I've caught up with him again to talk everything, what he's been doing since. First of all, Happy Valley, Mr. Jason Merrills is back. Hello, Jason.
Hi.
So, I mean, we talked about you about to do Happy Valley in what people have just heard, and now you've actually done it. How was it?
Yes. It was great. It was an interesting experience. I was playing a particular character in it who... a specialist police officer who specializes in kind of quite important interviews.
Right.
Which is something I learned, that a lot of police work has been very highly trained and compartmentalized. And if you're on an investigation, the person that's doing the interview often isn't the one that's on the street doing in the investigating. It's someone specializing in interview psychology and interview technique. So I was playing one of those guys.
How is that? Because I suppose people that like the fact you say that specialized, it's a specialized job that people probably train years to do, and then suddenly you're portraying one of those people. I mean, the responsibility, I suppose, is quite heavy to get it right.
It was. But Sally Wainwright prides herself quite rightly and quite spectacularly, I think, on being able to make a great story with all the essentials of the police work that she's, you know, working in the field of, being absolutely true and as grounded and as sort of, as actually what happens in an investigation. And I think we had police advisors on set all the time, and Sally herself has done so much research that I think we were pretty accurate with what happens, you know.
And I mean, you're saying, well, Sally Wainwright obviously writes a series. I mean, I know just from working on Emmerdale and stuff, we don't have much to do with the writers. Is it very different on something like Happy Valley? Was Sally there a lot of the time?
Yeah, well, she wears a lot of hats. So yeah, she was there a lot of the time. And sometimes, I think on a couple of days that I was working, there was some crossover with directors that didn't, or some, there were two units that had to shoot, so she was actually directing one of the units.
Wow, brilliant, amazing.
She did that quite a lot, and she's producing it as well. So, I mean, I think
that must be quite nice as an actor to have that. You know, it must be quite nice for you to be able to have someone there that's basically running the series. Do you know what I mean?
There's a lot of help watching. It's a very particular. It was a very particular part to play, but I enjoyed it. I was into. You know, my first day was interviewing. James Norton playing Tommy Lee Royce,
who's amazing.
It was a great scene. I really enjoyed it. But he's not in it a lot, my character. He dips in and out doing those kind of interviews. But it was really, really great to be a part of.
I think Line of Duty kind of set this bar, didn't it, for police interviews? I mean, big interviews, we got used to watching 15 minutes of one scene, which I think beforehand would be a kind of unheard of. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of changed the way now we watch telly as well, things like that.
Yeah.
So we want the realness. I was going to ask you what it was like being back in the Yorkshire countryside, but I'm guessing because you're a specialist trained police officer that you didn't see any Yorkshire countryside.
Well, I was staying there, but no, not much. Not much. It was we were based in Halifax, and which is actually, even though I worked so much in the north, it's not a town I knew.
No, I don't know Halifax, actually, because it was set in Hebden Bridge, isn't it? Which is right near Halifax. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is quite beautiful around there. Yeah. But I didn't see that much of it, to be honest.
No, you were just there. And I mean, you said James Norton's back, obviously, just to promote the shows. Sarah Lancashire's back. It's like, you must know from the acting game, it's quite hard to get everyone. It's probably taken quite a while as well, because it's hard to get everyone together, isn't it, when people become so prolific from a show?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I don't really know. I mean, I think those key three, because they're so connected. I mean, they're connected by blood, and His son is her grandson.
Yes,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Those three, Shiv and Sarah and James, it would have to be something that they wanted to do and Sally wanted to do. And I don't know how that happened
how that
or whether
works.
They're talking
no,
about
yeah,
that
yeah.
or what.
Yeah,
I mean, well, I think everyone else can either be in it or not in it. But I mean, I think those three would have been success essential, you know.
Yeah, you can't do like a, you know, Home and Away and replace James Norton with someone else and just call in the same character. Wouldn't work.
Yeah,
no. Final question, how was the catering? Nice catering, always vital.
Very nice.
Very nice. There
proper
we go.
Coffee
great.
Machines, please. Yes.
There were coffee machines.
Proper coffee machines.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. I was going to say, what's your wardrobe like as well? But I'm guessing just a nice suit.
Yeah, you know, bog standard police suit.
Yeah, right. So, What else you've been up to? You are until the about when is it? When do you finish your run of the play? And I'll say what it is.
The run of the play continues at the Mini Aid Chocolate Factory in London until the 7th of January.
7th of January, and seeing as we're in December, that gives you loads of time to book. And it's called The Sex Party.
The Sex Party. Yes.
Yes, lots of naked people on the posters. Give me a premise of it. I mean, what can people expect?
It's about a swingers party in Islington. These are people that are members of a kind of online swinging club, and they host a party. But it's quite a particular evening when the host of the party's old flame has finally come to one of these parties, who he's kind of in love with. His girlfriend is sensing that. So there's a lot of tensions that happen in that evening. He's also invited another woman, and she kind of enters the party and sort of sets a bomb off, really.
Right, okay. Sure. This sounds brilliant.
Not metaphorically.
Yeah. And are you hosting the party? Or not you, the character?
I play the host of the party, yeah. I mean, it's a sex comedy. It's a really good comedy of modern manners. And it deals with some quite controversial current issues
around
sex, identity, and gender. And I think it's pretty brave to put those on stage. It's not going to appeal to everyone, but it is. I tell you, it's funny.
it's a very big alternative to panto season, isn't it? Basically,
yeah, it is. I would say it was just short of a farce. It's not quite.
It kind of Abigail. It sounds a bit Abigail's Party for a new age generation, and another specialized character. You're going for a very intricate parts of society in what you're playing at the moment.
Yeah.
So head down to the I've never been there. Where is it? A lovely theater?
Oh, it's lovely. I mean, it's essentially a fringe venue, but
yeah,
it's an off West End venue, but it's on the South Bank near Borough Market, which is a lovely part of town.
Yeah.
And it has such a high pedigree. It punches so high above its weight. I mean, a lot of its shows, I mean, 90%, I think, something ridiculous like that, transfer to the West End.
Wow. Okay.
So, I mean, it really punches above its weight, and it has a great reputation.
I love going to the off West End theatres as well. So that's the Mini Aid Chocolate Factory until January. And then we need to talk about one of my favourite shows ever. I mean, I've watched from series one. Portrait Artist of the Year has got a Christmas special. We think it's on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day.
I think so. That's what they told me, but schedules often change. Yeah.
And it's a celebrity special, yearly tradition now, as much as the Queen's Speech was, the King's Speech this year. So how was it? So you are you love to paint, don't you, Jason? You do loads of painting.
I do, yeah. And I went to art school, and it's always something I've continued. And as I've got older, to be honest, the gaps between working as an actor and painting, sometimes I don't know which one is really me more. But certainly this summer and autumn, I was doing a lot. And then I was invited to do that, which I participated in.
If people haven't seen it, basically, I mean, how the normal series works, there's heats and you have celebrity sitters, this time celebrity artists, but a sitter, and you have 4 hours to do a portrait. I mean, I cannot believe it's only 4 hours because it's, I mean, how did you... Yeah. So I'm guessing, how long does it normally take you at home to do one of your paintings from start to finish?
Well, I mean, a kind of proper formal portrait, more than 4 hours. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots, lots.
So did you feel the how was the pressure on the day? And knowing people are watching you as well, because painting is normally quite an intimate thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the last hour, half hour was quite pressured. I sort of got into it in the first two and a bit. I kind of forgot everyone was there. I managed to do that, which was quite,
wow.
I was surprised at. I enjoyed it, actually. It was intense, but it was a really great day. The people that work on it, Katie Bryan and Stephen Mangan.
They're all brilliant, aren't they? Yeah, and I mean, Joan Bakewell, who... Yeah, Joan Bakewell.
Oh, God, yeah, legend.
Yeah, what an absolute legend. I'm just looking how old she is, actually, because I was having this argument with my...
She's wonderful, yeah.
She's absolutely... I mean, I remember from French and Scorn. Yeah, she's 89 years old, Joan Bakewell, who presents it. Yeah, she's fabulous, isn't she?
She is, yeah. So I really enjoyed that. And they were really kind to me. And, you know, because I had... They were also running the main competition at the time. And they quite liked my work and they wanted to put me into the main competition.
Oh, wow.
Celeb one, but they weren't able to because the timings didn't work. And
oh, what a shame.
They'd already done a certain amount of heats. But they've asked me to join the main competition next year. So not just
brilliant.
One. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
I do that.
And what other celebrities running with you? Can you reveal anything? Who else was doing it?
An actor called Tom Stoughton.
Yeah.
Who's a brilliant actor from Horrible Histories.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
And I think he's just released his own movie this year, which I can't remember the name of, and I haven't seen yet, but the trailers look amazing. It looks really funny. Yes.
And loads of other people. Loads of other
Ronnie,
people.
Ronnie Ancona.
Oh, Ronnie Ancona, amazing. Yeah.
Paris. And a lady whose name's gone out of my head, whose children.
And obviously, we can't say whether you won or not because you'll need to watch the show on Christmas. Yeah, and if people want to follow your paintings or even buy a painting, how do people go about it?
Well, I'm working on launching my website at the moment, which isn't quite up and running yet because it's
fine. Okay, we'd love to come back again and we'll talk about.
So it will be jasonmerrills.com. It will be easy to find, but it's not quite launched yet.
Right. Okay. So jasonmerrills.com. Keep an eye out for that. Go and see you in the sex party. Happy Valley coming up, we think, in January, which is very exciting. Yep. I think that's going to be another line of duty. I think we're going to see pretty high viewing figures, aren't we? I think we're going to see records set probably because it's the last installment as well, isn't it? Definitely the last installment. Yeah. And again, I won't ask anything about what's going to happen because we know you won't be able to say. But as normal, a pleasure to talk to you, Jason.
Thank you. You too.